It's time to clip your last good piece and dig in, because the runout starts now.
Hi, parents. A quick note. For those of you who like to jam out the runout with the kids in the back seat, we rely particularly heavily this time around on the F-bomb and references to the physical act of love, coitus, if you will. So maybe cue up the Disney playlist and save this one for later.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Andrew.
Chris, I have a brilliant idea for the new direction for our show.
Oh, yeah?
All gear reviews all the time.
We love those gear reviews. Yeah, God, it's been many, many years since those popped up on the infamous Taps episodes. But yeah, you actually do fuck with gear reviews, for reals.
I do fuck with gear reviews.
I know. I read them and I chuckle.
I know.
They're not.
They're kind of bullshit. But it is this interesting genre of content in climbing media. And, you know, they're part of magazines. They're a relic of magazines, I guess. There's gear review sites. Gear Junkie is like one of the most successful, you know, websites in the outdoor world.
Mm-hmm. Outdoor Gear Lab.
Outdoor Gear Lab.
Yeah. You know, in some ways like that How Not To guy is sort of a gear reviewer in a way.
And some of the, you know, the maybe not the gear reviews specifically, but gear articles are some of the top performing articles that I get on my website.
It boggles my mind, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because, no offense, and I'm you know, you can defend yourself any way you want, but
offense,
they're total bullshit. They're garbage. They're paid promotions, okay? They always have been.
I wish they were paid.
What's that?
I wish they were paid.
Well, you know, paid in some form or another. There is. It's a quid pro quo for 99% of gear reviews you read, unless you're just on... That's why when I buy anything, I go to the Amazon gear reviews or whatever, even if I'm not buying it from Amazon, because there you get like candid. But you also have to wade through those, because most of the time people have some other axe to grind that they fell on that has nothing to do with the piece of gear. But nevertheless, you can get a proper view. In some websites and some companies even shut those things off because they're a candid and so often negative review. So you find a lot of times like they won't let those appear. And mm-hmm. and it just goes back to the fact that it's all manipulated. And mm-hmm. so I just think it's funny. But but that's where we're going to come in, because we're giving some legit fucking reviews.
So, I mean, I've wanted to talk about gear on the show, and mm-hmm. I've kind of scratched my head about how to do that. But we came up with this concept called Fuck, Marry, Kill. Is this a game that anyone has ever played before? I don't think so. So this is this fun game, and it's going to be, we're going to come up with some gear picks for each of these categories. What gear would you fuck? What gear would you marry? And what gear would you kill?
Can you sort of define those categories a little bit? Because obviously you'd fuck anyone you'd marry, hopefully, mm-hmm. would be part of that.
Right.
You know, so how do we define these?
So fuck is literally something that you can put your penis into
or put into your vagina.
Yeah,
either one.
No. Fuck, I was thinking would be something like kind of shiny, new, and sexy, like just some gear that is like at the top of your kind of like fascination, like
thirst trap.
Thirst trap gear. Like, this is cool. This is new. I'm into it.
Right.
Mary is like the tried and true gear that you've been using for years and, you know, hasn't ever changed and is just your old faithful. And then kill is pretty self-explanatory. That's just like what you think is like terrible gear that. And that's kind of an interesting approach too, because often gear reviews, as we were just talking about, are very flattering, mm-hmm. From that kind of quid pro quo dynamic that's inherent to a lot of them. You don't see many bad gear reviews.
No.
You know, or at least like gear, like true reviews, like genuine reviews about something that's just straight up awful.
Yeah. And they'll do it. They may do the shit sandwich where they have like the slightly negative thing, like in the middle of a big paragraph, you know, just to try to like, basically it's just to try to, from a writing standpoint, to have like this bit of contrast for integrity. But it's rarely just like pilloring, you know?
Right. And we're going to take the bread slices off that shit sandwich today.
I'm going to try. We'll get, when we get there, I'll explain it. But I had a hard time with the kill category. I'm trying to figure out why. And maybe it's just because I'm scared to really rip something apart.
All right. So I've got a couple picks for each of those categories. Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I want you to go first. What category are we starting?
Okay, let's start with fuck.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought too.
So fuck, what am I fucking with right now? I just got this new piece of gear from Metolius that's a roll-up stick clip, and I think it's really, really cool. And I haven't even used it yet. I just like literally got it in the mail. It's basically like a 10-foot pole that packs, that like rolls up into a little thing the size of a, you know, a hamburger or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it like a tent pole? Like a shock like, corded or something?
It's this piece of I'm not quite sure what the material is. It's like super stiff plastic that can flatten. You know those like bracelets that you snap onto your wrist as kids? It's like that. Like it can flatten into like a into something just like flat, and then you roll it. But then once it's unrolled, then you cup it and it turns into like a hollow pole, basically, that's sturdy and like completely solid. And you can, it has a little clip on the top of it that you can screw a super clip, stick clip, and you know, the, like the two like cattle prong.
The wires.
Yeah, the wires.
Yeah.
Which is the best stick clip end.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So it's sick. It's like really cool. It like fits, it's like can fit into the bottom of your bag. It would be great for travel. It's a little heavy. It's like 28 ounces, which is almost 2 pounds, I think. So it's like maybe, as far as stick clip goes, maybe that's light or, you know, reasonable weight, but, you know, it just, because it's so compact, like when you're holding it, like, oh, this is like, you know, a couple pounds that I'm adding
to my pack. It feels heavy.
Yeah.
Because it's small.
Because it's small. But that,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, my 16 foot pole from Lowe's is pretty fucking heavy too.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah, so it's super cool. I think it's like pretty badass. The one downside is it's $225. It's really expensive.
I know. But that just reflects climbing's demographic, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a stick clip, you're going on a trip and whatever. It's like it could be, if you're traveling a lot. I think it's like a worthwhile investment potentially. It'll be interesting to see like if this material ends up like softening with age and stuff, and it just becomes this like flaccid, limp dick stick clamp,
which you can no longer fuck with.
Yeah, you can no longer fuck a flaccid pole.
Use it for fucking, because it's too flaccid.
So anyway, I'm super psyched on that. It's worth checking out, and it just came out, and so I got a sample from some PR company. They sent me one of these to check out. I'm gonna write up one of my bullshit gear reviews on Evening Sense about it. But I got to say, I'm pretty impressed with it so far. It's at least different. You know, it's like definitely the most high-tech stick clip I've seen.
And Metolius has always been sort of good for kind of a lab producing like things like that. So a lot of thought goes into their products over the years. Yeah, so my latest, newest thing, and it comes with a story, obviously, is the Flipstop Cam Carabiner Stabilizer from Avant Climbing.
I've never heard of that.
You've never heard of the product or Avant Climbing?
Both.
Okay, so Avant Climbing is interesting. It's Brent Bargon's company. He was an engineer at Black Diamond for a long time. He's this incredible trad climber, incredible climber, period. Or one of the things I can think of that people might have heard of is he did this unsupported, like, very rule-based ascent of Freerider with Amity Warm, where they just like did it true ground up, no stashed water, Amity told a funny story where there was water on this ledge and she was really fucking thirsty and she really wanted to drink it, but it was kind of Brent's thing, so she just like stuck with it. Anyhow, but really, really cool climber, and he invented these little things to put basically, you know, like a quick draw, like a Petzl quick draw. They've always had the little rubber keeper for the rope end of the carabiner so it doesn't flip. He invented these ones that go on your cam, which traditionally, if you're doing like a hard crack climb in Indian Creek, if you're doing kind of red point type climbing, everyone I know and myself included, we would tape them. You just wrap a little bit of tape around the end that squeezed the carabiner into the sling, and that was good enough. But they fall apart over time. And also, if you need to clip into that sling, like let's say you want to clip a draw onto it and hang, or later you're using those same cams on a you know, a trad route and you want to put a sling on it into the sling, then that tape is in the way. And if you weight it, it breaks. And it just is sort of not clean, you know? Mm-hmm. So he invented these little things, and they're just these little rubber things that wrap around the sling and the carabiner in a way that keeps the carabiner solid, but you can still clip the sling without impacting that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very esoteric. And I think what Avant is doing, you know, it's just, I think it's a bit of a side project for Brent, and it's like he's looking at building these very esoteric, very specific tools for hard climbing.
Cool.
And with that said, I posted a picture of them because I was psyched on them, and on the internet, and the safety folks just like went off on how if you do a similar thing to a totally dissimilar product and use it in a completely different way, it could maybe, if you're not paying attention in a very specific way, you may possibly cause this thing to fail. And I was just like, well, yeah, that's not what they're for. And
so
the other thing that
the
came
gear
up
incorrectly, it could fail.
Yeah, exactly. Right. If you use it. And so,
thanks.
So these
I'm
are
so
really
glad the internet's there to remind, to like, come up with these and brilliant points.
You know, there was like some good information when presented, you know, sort of genuinely and, you know, with the caveat of like, this is not totally relevant. But when people just started talking about how, oh, you're going to die or this is irresponsible or whatever, I was over it. And then the other thing that came up, and I deleted the post because of this, is that people started piping in often very glibly about Tito Traversa, who was a kid in Italy, 12-year-old phenom, and some non-climbing chaperone parent that was out with their group unwrapped these new draws and set them up wrong. The little keeper was separate from the draw in the package, and then set them up completely wrong. And Tito set off on a route, and the carabiners were only on the rubber stop, and they basically he fell like just or took or whatever on this hard climb, and they all ripped and he died. And as soon as people started like talking about that in any sort of glib way, like, oh, you don't want to pull a Tito Traversa, I was like, all right, I'm done. I mean, it just this horrible thing.
Yeah.
And this very freak thing that happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yes, that did happen. But, you know, it's like saying like, well, that person just steered their car into a tree, and so steering wheels don't work.
Right.
You know, like, anyway, so I had to get rid of it. But for me, I'm super into them. This is definitely an issue when you're trad climbing. And it's something that we've kind of like found this way around, but these are like a really cool, inexpensive. I mean, they're little rubber bands, basically. Yeah. So, and I paid full retail, I might add. Nice. This is not a penny.
Does this company make any other products, or is it just these little rubber?
You know, they make a keeper or a bungee for top rope soloing.
Huh.
I know that, and
some very esoteric climbing gear.
Very esoteric, dude. Huh. Let's see what's here. Shop our unique climbing gear. Let's see. Oh, there's a couple other things that I can't even hardly explain. Oh, there's a couple different other types of keepers for various things. Like they've got a little thing you can put on your belay carabiner to keep your gri-gri from cross loading.
Hmm.
So yeah, just like one of these things where he's identified these very small problems and found these like kind of innovative and looks like very inexpensive ways to kind of cure these little problems.
He's like patching the bugs of the climbing gear world.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's interesting because there's also Arizona Mountaineering. That's Patrick Kingsbury, who's doing similar kind of things, like that he has, or they have a bungee for top rope soloing as well, which is, again, something that anybody who does like the micro tractioning has just built for themselves at some point. It's a bungee cord that holds the device up so it feeds better, and it doesn't do any bearing of load, so it's just a bungee cord, right? Not no shock, there's no like strength to it. And those guys innovated it in a way that, because I use, actually, it would be another one that I could put on my fuck list. I use Patrick's. But yeah, but the other thing is these small companies building climbing gear, that I don't know what they're doing or if they have to protect themselves in a way of liability, even though a lot of these devices aren't specifically part of the safety system, but they're in climbing. And again, if they're misused, I'm just kind of curious, because it seems to be both very small companies, and carrying any sort of like liability insurance would probably like put them under. So I don't know. I'm just kind of curious about that. I don't have an answer.
Well, my takeaway from everything you just told me is that I'm going to go out and get some of these rubber band things and clip them to the bungee thing, and then take a whipper on that, preferably with a, you know, like a toy carabiner.
Well, the this is a whole nother subject, but anytime you get into like literally like the esoterica of what it takes to climb really hard, the safety hall monitor people are always aghast.
Yeah.
And, you know, we rely on our experience, we rely on our judgment, and it may not necessarily fit into the book you read, or the YouTube video you watched, or the several guides that you follow, because guiding is not the same. And it's like, I'm to the point where, like, you're not allowed to know anymore. Like, nobody should be posting that shit. I just watched this guy who like, said something about, like, bending a cam lobe back, and because it got messed up, and like everybody just like lost their fucking minds on the dude. And you know, I'm just so over that part of like Instagram. Take Tito Traverse's fucking name out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
yeah,
there was a lot of details to that accident too that people just don't even know about. And
yeah, it's a really rugged story.
Anyway, I'm fucking the Avant nice. Cam carabiner keeper.
Well, that's a good pick. All right, should we move on to Mary?
Sure.
Okay.
Hi, gang. New regime here at The Runout. If you'd like to hear the rest of the FMK discussion, find out what we married and killed. Subscribe to patreon.com/runoutpodcast for the full spray. And of course, our monthly bonus material, and maybe just to support the show. Okay. On to part two.
Wes Schweitzer is an offensive guard for the New York Jets, number 71. To quote a headline from Climbing Magazine, meet the 330-pound NFL lineman addicted to rock climbing. All right, so we are here with Wes Schweitzer of the New York Jets. And, you know, we talk to lots of professional climbers on this show, but you might be the first person who we can actually call a professional athlete without, you know, a wink and a nod and a bit of irony laced into all of that. So thanks for coming on the show, Wes. And why don't you just give us a setup on who you are? How do you describe what you do professionally, and what's your climbing background?
Well, I'm excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me. I'm Wes Schweitzer. I'm from Arizona. I went to school at San Jose State. I studied biochemistry. Spent a lot of time studying that. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to use it, but ended up getting drafted in the sixth round to the Atlanta Falcons, 2016. Spent 4 years there. And then I was 3 years on the Redskins / Washington football team / Commanders. And then I'm going on my second year with the New York Jets. And I found climbing in around 2020. I had I think 2018 or 2019, I hyperextended my left elbow. And I spent the whole year doing traditional rehab. Just felt super weak. having all sorts of issues and spent the whole year, didn't get any better. And I did all the things you're supposed to do, all the traditional stuff. And then I met a trainer. His name's Austin Einhorn. You can find him on Instagram. And he's like, yeah, man, you got to try some different grips. You know, you need to get on a climbing wall, try some different holds. Like your hand is meant to grab different things. And within 5 minutes, I was pain-free. And so I had spent a full year. And all of a sudden, within 5 minutes, I was pain-free. And that completely changed my mind and changed my perspective on everything I knew about movement and training. In the weight room, I was one of the strongest people on the team. And I was in Atlanta at that time, but I wasn't one of the strongest players on the field. And so I just was curious and I was like, why not go to the climbing gym? Like, why not try it? And so I went to Adrenaline Climbing in Atlanta and owner there, Nathan Steele, he took me in and he started training me. And the first session, I couldn't do a V0, you know, which is just like a ladder pretty much. And I was like, I couldn't do this. And so I was absolutely mind blown that there was more to learn about movement, more to learn about everything. And the rest is history. I gained I was around 315. I gained like 15 pounds of muscle. I was up to 330. And so I gained more weight to climb, which is kind of remarkable because it's so hard for people around my weight, you know, and it was just, it's just life changing. So I was pain free. I got stronger. I started playing better football and I made more money. And those all kind of go really well together, you know? So I was hooked. And so then I was climbing in the gym and then I went outside and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't climb anything outside, you know? So, and then I just got hooked on that. And then it's just mind blowing to me. It seems like such a obvious thing, you know, just get to the top of something, but it takes everything. You need to be mentally strong, mentally aware, creative, physically strong, and you're challenged every step of the way, you know, and then emotionally and spiritually, you know, it's like you have to believe that you can do it. And so there's a lot of stuff that went into that. It gave me more confidence, you know, it made me more a confident person, gave me more belief in myself because you're like, wow, I just did something that I thought was impossible, you know, and it was impossible maybe a couple months ago, but I was able to train and organically build my way up to doing it, you know? So that's kind of my background. But yeah, I'm really big into bouldering. I've done rope climbing. I followed on trad and I followed on sport. I've been to the Red River Gorge. I climbed with the Gunks. I've bouldered in Ireland, you know? So I've bouldered around the world, been to Yosemite, and I'm just super excited, just absolutely in love with it. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about building confidence with it because, you know, I just think about what you do as a professional and that you not only, you know, are you out there on this field with all these men trying to, you know, kill you essentially or whatever, but also like that you do it in front of the, you know, literally the biggest crowds in the world. You know, the fact that like you find this other outlet where you feel a little bit humbled and you have to sort of build your confidence is pretty fascinating. You know, what about that, you know, sort of, I guess, path to building your confidence to be able to do what you do on, like I said, on a field in front of tens of thousands? Was that always with you or was that also something that you had to sort of build the confidence to walk out on a field like that?
I've always kind of been the underdog. You know, I didn't start until my senior year. I play offensive line, you know, and then I went to San Jose State. It's not the biggest football school. You know, I was drafted late and I didn't think I was going to make the team. Then I made the team and then I started the full next year, started in the playoffs and I'm blessed to start 65 games. And it's, I don't know, just like every step, every one of those games, man, your confidence goes up and down. It's like a roller coaster because when you play offensive line, if you give up a sack, you had a horrible day, you know? So that's one play out of, you know, 70, 80, 90 plays that you could have. And so it's hard to really, you can get really down on yourself in professional sports. And I feel like it's the same thing in climbing, you know, it's, man, I'm not climbing at the level that I thought, or I used to climb, or I'm not climbing the grade I thought, you know? And it's like, it's a big lesson in life that I'm learning is that it's not about what you do. It's like how you live your life, you know? And And so that's, so going out and just enjoying climbing is the same thing for football. It's like, man, I could make this the most stressful thing and overanalyze every step of the way, or I can enjoy every day, you know, and those kind of go hand in hand, you know, but that's also the, that those are the most exciting things about life to me, is those things that are the hardest to do, you know, which is football and climbing to me.
I think it's important for listeners to just kind of understand exactly what kind of beast you are. And you kind of alluded to the fact that you were among the strongest on your team, but why don't you just like give us some stats? Like, what are you deadlifting and stuff like that? Like, I'm not saying, asking you to do this to kind of put yourself above any of your teammates or anything like that, but I'm just curious to know what the culture of the NFL is like. Do you guys like look, are people like, oh, Wes just, you know, bench pressed X amount of pounds or something? And do people like kind of keep track on each other's, you know, kind of stats in between teams or within teams?
I mean, I think people are always looking for the outliers, but like, you know, it really comes down to performance on the field. That's the number one thing. And that's the most remarkable thing, is that the top performers are not just, they don't just have one good game. They're consistent day in and day out. But, you know, I trap bar deadlifted 765. I box squat 675. And those are, you know, I board pressed 500 pounds or bench pressed. And, those are like my top numbers, but I mean, I think climbing is more relevant to football than any of those, you know, and because those lifts are linear lines, and none of football is done in a linear fashion. And some of the best players could barely lift anything close to those numbers, but they were so good at football. So is it more important for you to bench a big number, or is it more important for you to play football well, you know? And so that's like, you know, that's the kind of the take home message I feel like I've learned over the years, is like, I was really trying to chase bigger numbers when I, you know, it's probably more about performance than anything, and longevity and staying healthy.
So you talked about how climbing helped solve some of your elbow issues, and also just gaining 15 pounds. I assume that was like just arms and back and stuff, the kind of the climbing muscles like that you would use.
Calves, hips, like, standing on your toes like that is not required in any professional sport. And so it's like, it is remarkable how strong you have to be. Like, oh yeah, just smear on this small foothold and stand up. For me, it's like that's the crux of the problem. Like, that is an impossibly hard thing to do. And, you know, not to railroad whatever question you're going to ask, but the things that are asked at even V0s is remarkable to the average athlete. Like, people can't do this stuff. I really believe it.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about just the kind of this humbling experience that you've had, you know, working up through the bouldering grades, and what have you kind of been noticing about how, you know, what climbing has taught you from a movement perspective, and then maybe tell us how that translates, you know, onto the field.
Man, so I, you know, I was working up, and there's a V5 in Maryland called The Belly, and it's like probably the best boulder in all of Maryland. There aren't many boulders in Maryland, and I was working my way up, and I didn't send it in one go, but I did all the pieces essentially, and I was like, wow, I am a V5 boulderer. I have made it. And then I come out, to Haycock Mountain in Pennsylvania. I come to the Gunks, and you're like, a V0 is the hardest thing you've ever done. And that's what I really realized. It's not just, oh yeah, I could do a V5 arete if all the holds are in a great spot and I can, it's a good sloper that works well for me at my body type, but this V0 might be the hardest thing I've ever done. And that is so frustrating, humbling. But then when you realize that you are just progressing in every aspect of how you climb slab, vertical, overhang, you know, arets, compression, slopers, crimps, you know, it's just like, there's so much you're required to do. And so coming from football, a lot of people, when they retire, they're lost, because we are on such a set schedule. From when I was in Pop Warner, when I was a kid, till NFL, I'm on a schedule, I'm training, I have a goal. for weightlifting, there's not much to do. There's bench, squat, deadlift, and like accessory lifts. And like you're eventually going to, if you get to the upper levels, you're probably going to get hurt, you know, over time. Climbing is the pursuit of mastery is endless. And that is just fascinating to me, you know, and that's, I was very upset when I couldn't do some V0s, but then I realized, oh, I need to get better at smearing. You know, I need to get better at this. And I just love that entire pursuit, you know.
I've always noticed that climbing, you know, has this lifelong pursuit of mastery, as you just put it, that you don't really get in traditional ball sports. And I've always felt, you know, I had jock friends in college, and, you know, they were living the best, you know, athletic careers of their lives at that time. But then school's over and they don't become professional athletes and they don't really know what to do with themselves. And, you know, nobody's playing football at a high level, you know, just recreationally. You know, it's like you're either in the NFL or you're, you know, not. And but climbing is something that you can kind of do at any level. And it's something you could do at any age. And you know, as you're showing, any body size as well.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, the thing about this is we've been talking around how strong you are, but also how big you are. And sort of the weight is a bit of an issue that I think surrounds when people talk about your climbing. You know, I have a friend and I've interviewed Drew Halsey, who's a bigger climber, who's kind of promoting that space, as it were, around like any body type can climb. He's a different body type than yours even. But the weight is an interesting thing because you're big, you know, 300 pounds, or I don't know what you're running right now. We talk about skinny climbers. We talk about, you know, gravity being our enemy and therefore weight may be our enemy. But meanwhile, being a certain size as a lineman is kind of required. So you've got this place where it maybe hinders you and a place where it helps you. You know, how do you view yourself, you know, your body type? Talk a little bit about how that affects your climbing. And are you aware you people scatter when you need a spot? Like,
oh, man, that's a good question.
Like everybody's like, oh, I don't know. Like, yeah. I got something to do on my phone over here.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I'm around 325 right now. Okay. The heaviest I ever was 340. Which is like, man, I'm never getting back up to that number again. And yes, there's many a day where I go out to the boulder field and I'm like, if I was 25 pounds lighter, I think I could do this, you know? And it's like, I think that's something exciting for me because I think I could push the limits of what a 300 pound person could climb. Because if I dropped 25 pounds, I could be climbing X grade. But like, I don't think there needs to be this overall chasing of dropping weight to climb harder, because I don't think that's healthy. You know, I really see a lot of these climbers that I think are probably a little bit more muscle would actually help you, you know, and keep you healthier and help you climb harder. So I think they're over the years, like, you know, a lot of bigger people message me on social media, like, hey, you are a person that's large and you're inspiring me to climb harder. And I met this guy at Nick Knapp out of New Jersey, and he's like 290. He's like the first person I met that's like around my size, and we climb around the same thing. He's so strong. And yeah, we get out and we boulder together. But honestly, I think the more restrictive thing to me is my frame. Like, okay, yeah, sit down, start on this hold that's at my waist level and put a heel hook up and stand up. I'm like, if I was 150 pounds, I don't think I could do this. So I don't know if it's really the weight or it's more like my actual body size. And then it's,
I mean, how tall are you?
I'm 6'4" and a half.
Okay. So you're a big guy all around. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's the thing too, is like I have big hands, and it's like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to, you know, to, climb some of these cracks in Yosemite. Like, will my fingers fit in the crack? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's more body size and body type than weight, truly, you know. But yes, I do think about that often.
There's probably some boulders out there that you could just do a standing jump to get to the top of, like,
yes,
over,
yes,
the climber, like, doing their sit stand.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Count it.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I always tell this, I mean, you're primarily a boulderer for various reasons. And, you know, I imagine post NFL, you'll probably pursue some other types of climbing a little bit more heavily when you have more time and things like that. But I always tell this story when I worked in this gym in LA. There was a guy who was one of these dudes who was, you know, he would do strongman competitions and all that sort of thing and climb in our gym. And it was in his past. I mean, he was much smaller than he was during his prime, but apparently he had, in some competition, he had moved some rock in Scotland that hadn't been moved in like 100 years or something. I mean, it was this story may be apocryphal, but you know, like, because they, you know, they do, like, they've been doing sort of strongman stuff in Scotland for centuries, right?
Yeah.
So some mossy boulder, he moved it, and like, you know, the village had a parade or something yeah. like that. But more relevant was, like, he was so much bigger than anyone I'd ever seen climbing, and this was, you know, 25 years ago or 30 years ago, and the sweetest guy. But, you know, we had this pretty small climbing gym. You could fall, you know, it was like 30 feet tall, the lead wall. So like any larger whipper and you were pretty damn close to the ground. And like watching that dude whip on our janky old climbing ropes, you know, was pretty exciting. And
yeah.
who's going to blame him? And we had these floor, you know, the sort
anchors.
Of attached to the floor anchors, and it would just like rip some like 170 pound dude. Like,
yeah,
it was pretty wild. So, I mean, you know, what's been the reaction, you know, to you kind of walking into the climbing gym? Does it turn heads? You know, are people like kind of curious about this guy that's in there that's so much kind of bigger than your average person? You know, what's sort of the reaction? We all enjoyed with Tom, like he knew it was kind of wild and we all thought it was great and he's a sweet guy and stuff. So that's how that turned out. But it was really unusual.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun. I kind of enjoy it. You know, I'm not famous at all for football. Like, who knows offensive linemen, really? You know,
and that's an interesting thing, right? You guys are like the anonymous crew out there, and unless you're a real fan, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so then, I was out at Rocktown in Georgia. And I walk around the corner in the middle of a boulder field, and like, hey, you're Wes Schweitzer. You're like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, more people know me for climbing than for football, you know? So, I can barely go out sometimes because I'm like, I run into a lot of people that know me, but not for football, really, you know? So it's pretty funny.
I'm curious to hear a little bit more about the intersection with training and the NFL. I mean, like I said, you're kind of like the first real professional athlete that we're talking to. So you come from this world where, you know, the best trainers in the world presumably are the people that you're interfacing with, and
you would think
I'm sure you've got maybe disagree with that for various reasons, but yeah, I'm you know, tell us about like his climbing training. I don't know how much you've dabbled into this or explored it, but it's just kind of this like rogue world of theories and, you know, subjective experiences that like it worked for one dude, so then I should try it too.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of just like patching together what a proper training protocol or regimen looks like for climbing. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts as someone who's interfaced with like an actual professional, experienced trainers who know what they're talking about, and then like looking into the climbing world and seeing what you see. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how climbing training stacks up to just kind of the broader training world at large.
Oh man, this could be the longest answer of the show. I could talk on this for hours, but the biggest thing for me is that I think both sides of football and traditional training and then climbing could use some of the other side's training. So often I see climbers, they boulder, they get to the top, they drop down, they fall in a horrible, horrible form, and they fall and sometimes they tear their ACLs or they tweak their ankles. And I have never had an issue dropping down onto a pad ever, because we do it often in sports. You do box jumps and then you land in a squat and you land in a safe athletic position. And I've never had any issues whatsoever, and I feel very safe. And I see so many people that I've seen personally just at the gym hurt themselves falling from the top of a hold. And so I think climbers could use more squats. I think climbers could use more, you know, box jumps and stuff like that, more for just healthy, proper leg mechanics. Not like, I'm not saying you need to go on some regimen and do this program to climb harder, but to be safer and to actually learn how to use your body. And so the take home message is movement is movement, no matter if you're playing football, no matter if you're climbing, and there's proper biomechanics that lead to healthier performance. And so in football, we don't do enough hanging. We don't do enough stuff rehabbing finger injuries. So how many times has a climber blown a pulley or torn a finger or done all sorts of injuries to the fingers? They come back and climb hard. Football, we bust our fingers all the time. I have many torn ligaments. I have many in my hands, in my fingers, dislocated fingers. Guess what they do? You tape it up and you keep playing. And so your fingers, for football players, turn into these straight, misshapen lumps, and they don't work anymore. And the simplest routine that they could do is they could just get on a hangboard and do various holds and just keep their feet on the ground and just load body weight and load the proper function of your fingers. And so you're asking about training. When I play during the season, I climb one time a week indoors, and I'm just getting on whatever I feel up to, you know, so just getting on jugs and just that, it reworks my fingers, it reworks my wrists, my elbows, my shoulders. And I think properly dosed, climbing is one of the best healing modalities that you could ever do. You know, and so that, and it's so obvious to me, like we have these shoulder injuries, we have all sorts of things, like, yeah, man, just hang on some jugs for X amount of time and you're going to feel so much better. It's unbelievable, because your body has to move well when you're climbing. And so with poor mechanics and muscular imbalances, like, yeah, you're going to have issues climbing, but like, I think it's one of the healthiest things to do. And often I listen to my body. I'm like, oh man, my fingers aren't filling up to this gigantic move I'm about to do. Like, I'm just going to cut it right there. And I walk away healthy. And I've never been injured climbing. I've been injured playing football, but I've never injured climbing. So, but to talk about like my training regimen, climbing is intense. I can only do it 2 times a week without feeling absolutely burnt out. I'm not sure how people do it more than 2 times a week right now, but my typical, I train 4 times a week, 2 times upper, 2 times lower. I climb on my upper days, and then I come home and do a lift that is more football specific movements. And then I do 2 lower body days where I run and then lift for football. But the crossover from climbing to football is unreal. You know, imagine you're climbing and you're on all these super like tough slopers, and you know, you're building up your hand strength, your upper body strength. And then I come to football and I get to grab somebody's pads or their jersey. They're like jugs, you know, it's almost cheating. You know, it's like, I feel like it's improved my performance that much.
Wow.
And, it's so obvious to me. Am I saying wide receivers should be doing this? Maybe, you know, but I think for offensive and defensive linemen, you know, anyone that plays near the football, you know, it's a no brainer.
It's interesting that you've seen these improvements in, you know, I think I read somewhere you've sort of talked some of your comrades on the football field into doing a little bit of climbing, but it sounds like if somebody gets you started, you're fairly you want to promote this thing because of what it's helped you. I mean, have you been able to convince anybody else? You know, you are the anomaly. We're talking to you partially because of that. anybody else like these benefits and gotten anybody on board with it?
Yes, I mean, I've taken people to a gym, but you know, you go in and they climb a couple of V0s and they're exhausted, you know, because it's so hard to move your body around. And so, yes, I've gotten a couple people to do more training with it, you know, because I've been able to have a lengthy career, you know, and I think that plays into it too. But yeah, that's the biggest thing, is to get people to commit to something that's outside the box. You know, is I feel safe when I train the way I do. I know that it's going to get me X amount results. Well, I feel like it's time to start opening up our toolbox and way we do things. And so an example is this. I met the head NHL trainer for a hockey team while I was in Washington, and they had been using hangboards for decades. I had no idea that anyone had ever heard of a hangboard, but they had been doing it for so long. And guess what they said? They said the reason was it felt like it made their fingers stronger to use a stick for fighting for a puck. And I was like, oh, dude, it's obvious, you know, but like, why isn't this more widespread, you know? And I think, and it's not just like finger strength, upper body strength, like I was saying, the calf, hip strength, and then it's just body awareness. So often in professional sports, I make mistakes because my body was in the right position. Well, climbing, you have to be in the right position. Otherwise, you're not going to go anywhere, you know, and that really, those go hand in hand.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's interesting to hear you talk about this because I could imagine an alternate universe in which as a professional football player, you come to the climbing world and you notice that, oh, I know how to move my body the right way and climbing is, you know, kind of easier for me, you know, or something like that. But it's the opposite turned out to be true for you. It sounds like where you realized how much you had to learn in terms of how to move your body. And it was through climbing that you kind of came to these understandings.
Kind of a step back is like, I film all of my climbs. And so I have met so many climbing people who are like, why are you filming? You know, you're just trying to get on social media, huh? Like, you know, and it's like, guess what we do in football? We film everything we do. And I know exactly what my best blocks look like. You know, there's a proprioception that goes into that. Well, I know in this climb, man, this thing feels impossible. But if I just take a step back and say, oh, I just need to smear my foot, turn my hand to a press and stand up, it should work. And then you cross the boundary of what you thought was mentally impossible into something that is possible. And filming is actually a big part of that, you know? And so, yeah, social media plays into it. But I think climbers could benefit from filming more of their stuff, seeing how their body actually moves, you know, and realizing what they're doing.
Yeah, Andrew, quit hammering the moonboard people on the internet. They're just trying to get better, Andrew. That's all.
Fair.
You know, I have a question, too, about culture. You know, these are both sort of athletic pursuits, but, and I may be wrong about this, but they may be sort of polar opposite culture-wise. I was wondering if you could comment on that, sort of you're kind of walking from, you know, whatever culture you have in the NFL amongst your teammates, highly pressurized, you know, you're financially, it's like you're living and, you know, you've got to be thinking about your longevity and keeping yourself healthy and which team wants you and performance and all these things. And then you get to walk into this world where people are a little bit different and maybe the pressures are gone because it's just a pursuit that you love and there's no sort of financial incentive for it. So can you talk a little bit about like both your attitudes towards the two different things and also, like I said, the way you feel about the two cultures, as it were, your teammates versus your climbing partners?
Yeah, football, I've met some of the most amazing people because the people that play a long time, they're different. You know, they're built different. They think differently. They have an energy about them that is larger than life, you know? And so I've met some amazing people in football, but that the part of it, like I was kind of talking about before, is like, we need to stay in the box, you know? And it's really innovation within the box, because if I go outside the box, guess what? We all get fired. My family's done. I'm not making any money. We're gonna have to move across the country, you know? And so there's a lot of pressure to perform within the realm that has been established. And so then there's the people that break outside the box and, you know, they develop new things and then people start to change. But, you know, there is a lot of pressure to stay within the box. And so that was the thing that was amazing. I went to a climbing gym. And it's like people love to help, you know? And so, you know, if you went to a traditional gym and I was weightlifting, and I was like, hey man, can you spot me? Can you help me out? They'd be like, no way, man. Or maybe it might be kind of weird. Like, you're lifting more than me. I don't like that. You know, it's like you go to a climbing gym, there people are just psyched to see people climb, you know, and that is such a different experience. And that's also what's part of like they led me to the community is because almost everybody I've met is amazing. They're just psyched to see you climb. You climb V0, V10, it doesn't matter. And yeah, it matters to some people, but like it's all about your personal pursuit. And then that's the most amazing thing is when you overcome those barriers, you know, of stuff that you thought was impossible. I think some of the biggest spiritual experiences I have had are getting to the top of a rock. It's like that took everything I had in me and more, and I didn't think it was possible, and then somehow I did it. And other than a football Sunday, you know, Sunday night football or something like that, I haven't gotten anything close to that in my life, you know? So it's like, it's just amazing that you could just get that, you and a rock. And it's kind of ridiculous when you try to explain it to some people, like they just don't understand. But I think more people are starting to understand.
You just kind of described a peak experience in the climbing world about getting to the top of a boulder, but tell us about like a peak experience in football. What's like the equivalent for you?
I don't know. Football is different for everybody. I don't know. Offensive linemen, I feel like we're all the same. Like we just, you know, you know, like I said, you make one mistake in a whole game. It's kind of like you had a rough day, you know? So I don't know if I ever feel really good until it's over. But the best feeling for me is the day after a game and I played a great game. I played really well. I made few mistakes. I was kicking ass. You know, it's like, it's really being able to take a step back in the moment. And like, that's the biggest pursuit for me is like, how do I enjoy it more in the moment? Because it is just so, it is pretty stressful, you know? But man, you know, Sunday night football, Monday night football, you're the only game on TV. You're coming out to the stadium. It's just a special atmosphere.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, the, you know, your position and what you do on the field. It's like, I don't know how to explain it, but when you have a good game, it's sort of like, it's like unremarkable in the sense that what you did was, I mean, what you did was prevent something from happening, and that's hard to kind of pinpoint. Like a moment of that happening versus like, you know, the great touchdown catch or anything else. And, you know, I started to think about like a country music song about linemen, like the life of the lineman that doesn't, you know what I mean? Like you prevented something from happening.
Yeah.
And if you prevented it from happening for the entire game,
yeah,
that's a great game, but no one's going to, you know, it's not going to like stand out. So it's like, I'm going to write this country song about it.
Yeah, like, oh, I can't wait.
You know, the sad, lonely pursuit of excellence is on the line. You know
yes,
what I'm saying?
So exactly.
It's just an interesting thing to, that's your job. Your job is to prevent this thing from happening. And it's pretty, it's, you know, and once, like you just said, one screw up and that's it. Those, like you said, those whatever, however many plays in a row that you did the right thing, get thrown out the window kind of a thing. So it's pretty intense.
Yeah. You know, and then the business side plays into it too. You know, it's when it comes to money, it's like, they're incentivized to try to keep your value down so they can pay you less, you know? So like you might be doing really well, but it's actually better for them if you aren't doing as well as you think you are, you know? Right. So, there's a lot of things that come into it that are mentally really, really challenging. It is a life-changing sport in many ways. But man, I'm just psyched on climbing.
What's your long-term career look like? I don't know if you can talk about your goals beyond your contract at the moment, but what, I mean, I imagine at some point you'd like to transition out of football, but anything, what do you think is next for you after your time in the NFL?
So we are going to be moving to California and I want to climb at Yosemite, and, I've met Hans Florin. I'm super excited. I want to get into big multi-pitch, you know, climbing. I think I'm going to build up over the years climbing boulders in Yosemite just to try to get my strength up and all that stuff. But yeah, I want to get into super hard multi-pitch climbing, but there's so much more to learn. You know, I haven't led anything. You know, I haven't led trad. Like there's just so many, it's just, you know, so many things. But that's the thing with football is like you just take it one day at a time and you train every day. And I never thought I'd be climbing V4, V5, you know, but I am, you know. So it's like I believe that I could set my mind at about anything and I think I'll get there, you know. And I'd love to set some benchmarks at 300 pounds that no one has ever thought was possible. You know, I really want to do that and kind of just reframe the mindset, because I think there is a, because a lot of climbers didn't come from traditional training, like I think they're missing a lot. You know, I don't think being as skinny as possible is really the answer for maybe, yes, if you're at the very, 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 very top. But I think for performance wise, you can actually benefit from more training and a little bit more muscle. I really do believe that.
You know, you might not gotten deep enough into the history of it, but there has been a shift away from that, you know, at least Andrew and I have sort of lived through in the 80s and 90s, this idea of being absolutely super, super thin, limiting calories. There's famous stories out there of people even, you know, literally taking laxatives and things like that. And it shifted, you know, and we modern climbers certainly aren't heavy, but they are much, much more athletic and muscular than they were like 25 years ago.
For sure.
And again, it's like, they had to kind of go through these hard times where people were blowing pulleys and tendons and things because exactly. They were so unhealthy. But yeah, I mean, there's been this constant shift, but maybe not at the level that you're sort of talking about.
Yeah, you know, I'm still relatively new to the sport, obviously, and I'm still learning about everything, and that's the fun part too, is that I come to a lot of things, and that's my favorite part, is that. Can you climb it or can you not, you know? And that if, when it comes to football, it's like, no, we do this by the rules. You know, we do a lot of these things by the rules. You know, it's like we put heat packs on things. Well, what's better than a heat pack? We can put a laser on it, you know? So it's like, did we innovate or are we just doing the same thing a little bit better, you know? And, but when it comes to climbing, it's like, oh man, can you climb it or can you not, you know? So how do you do it? You know, and you're super open to hearing these different things, you know? And I'm glad that the sport is changing it that way.
One thing that has really stuck with me during this conversation, Wes, is just kind of an admiration for your open-mindedness. And it seems like that's not a trait that seems to be as quite as common as you might think in the NFL. Maybe a lot of your fellow players, you know, they'll try climbing and they don't see that this is like beneficial, or they're not quite open-minded to this as like a useful tool for training or something like that. But you seem to be open-minded to a lot of these things, and I'm curious if that is something that you would agree with. Is that a fair assessment? And where does that come from?
It kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, is like I was in the box. I was the box. I did everything by the box. I did everything I was told to do, followed all the training rules. I lifted as hard as I could, and I felt horrible. My body felt horrible. My performance wasn't as well as I thought it could be. And I lacked confidence in myself. And then I was slowly exposed over time. And it wasn't I just woke up one day and like, hey, I'm going to do everything outside the box. You know, it's like, I still do my squats. I still do my deadlifts, you know, but I don't bench press in the off season because I don't think it really has the biggest carryover to our sport. You know, I think I gain a lot more by climbing, you know? And so, yeah, it was a gradual shift. And now that I'm on the other side, it's so obvious, you know, there's so much room for improvement. And I don't think it needs to be drastic. I think we just need to add a couple things. And then I think we could, some of the biggest things viewing these finger injuries, it's like, other sports have finger, like, you know, climbing has finger injuries and they come back and they still perform. Why are we just taping these up and they turn into, you know, you wouldn't believe what you would see. And people still play through it because you can push through a lot of pain, you know. And so that's part of it, is that if you push through, you know, and I'm still performing, then why do I need to change? Well, eventually you're going to reach a breaking point, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing, is that we can just be a little bit more open to how we view things.
So how much have you dipped into the sort of the culture and in terms of like reading the articles and finding out about other climbers and all the climbing out there? Are you sort of absorbing it the way a lot of fiendish new climbers do, where you're reading everything you can and checking out all the things and have your heroes and stuff like that? Or do you have time for that? Have you dipped into that kind of part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I did was I bought like 20 climbing books, and then, you know, and then I realized that I don't know anything, you know, so then I was like, I kind of worked my way up the grades. And then I started to kind of get more into that and really researching stuff, because I'm like, how do you make it really coming from the outside? And it's like, there's sort of like plateaus, you know, it's like V0 to 2, it's pretty straightforward. But then after that, like, they're kind of these perplexing, you know, moves. And I'm like, how do you get above these grades? It just seems unworldly, you know? And so, yes, I bought bought a lot of books, watch a lot of videos, and I spend a lot of time watching a real rock, all those rock climbing movies and stuff, and just get psyched before I go out. And and I always watch these videos and I'm like, these look possible. You know, I am going to climb V10. I could do it. And then I get outside and I'm like, wow, it's really hard. You know, so it is just an amazing sport.
Today's final bit comes from returning artist Harris Freef, with his new track, Tortillas and Peanut Butter, off his album Guitar 2. Thank you.
You've just reached the end of another Patreon episode of The Runout. If you're receiving your Runout fix through the Patreon feed, it means that you've decided to live your days as a giver and supporter, which is a beautiful attitude that will lift your spirits and draw an admiring eye from your peers and loved ones. For this, we commend you, because we wouldn't be able to do this without your contribution. Kudos and mazel tov. And if you'd like to reach out with questions, concerns, praise, or criticism, or even contribute some content to Buddy Spray or The Final Bit, email Andrew at andrew@runoutpodcast.com or Chris at chris@runoutpodcast.com. Although, let's face it, emailing Andrew is probably a better bet.